Hello, rangatira ma. No Mikey Te Pai or Te Wao Nui. You're listening to Te Wao Nui, a Wrap of the Week's Māori News here on RNZ National. No mai, haere mai, tēnā koutou katoa, ko Ashley McCall a home. This week, we check in on the National Māori Housing Conference. The Māori electoral option opens. We're at a special launch of Te Pōhere Kōrero, and a Ngāi Tahu Wharenui celebrates a century. But first, hundreds are gathering at Aotearoa in South Taranaki on Friday for a ceremony on the settlement between Ngā Iwi o Taranaki and the Crown over the future of Taranaki Maunga. The deal, which still needs to be ratified, includes a co-governance arrangement for Te Papakura o Taranaki, previously known as Egmont National Park. Hamish Cardwell reports.
Under the deal, the park's peaks, regarded as tupuna by Māori, will jointly become a legal person named Te Kahuia Tupua. Taranaki Maunga was confiscated by the government in 1865 for what was considered rebellion by local iwi in the Taranaki Wars. In 1978, the Maunga was vested in the Taranaki Māori Trust Board, which gifted it back to the nation. The Waitangi Tribunal found that Taranaki iwi had little to no input into that decision.
As of Friday, Māori are free to switch their enrolment choice at any time, except in the 3 months before an election. After a law change last year, Māori will be able to decide whether to enrol on the general roll or the Māori roll. Pōkiri Paiwai reports.
The Electoral Commission's Chief Māori Advisor, Hone Matthews, says Māori have an important choice before them.
I think it's pretty significant. It's the first change since 1975. And it effectively enables our people to change the role that they're on. Previously, we've had to wait 5 to 6 years at a census time to able to utilise that vote.
And a publicity campaign is about to get underway, with information packs to be delivered to 500,000 voters from Saturday. There will also be an advertising campaign to reach those who are not enrolled, and the Electoral Commission will be in schools to get first-timers enrolled. Hone Matthews says the Commission will be working closely with iwi.
Our people have reached out through a number of iwi agencies, and we have community engagement officers on the ground working with iwi as well.
Māori Party co-leader Rāwiri Waititi says he hopes the information campaign will be large enough to reach isolated communities.
There's not much publication on it. Not a lot of our communities know about the Māori electoral option. There should have been a marriage between the census and the Māori roll option, because it all intertwines in terms of the percentage of the population, also determines the percentage of the roll and how many seats you get.
The number of people on the Māori roll affects the number of Māori electorates. Victoria University lecturer Dr. Annie Te One says many people may not understand this function of the Māori roll.
So it's really important that this change also comes hand in hand with educating people around what the roles actually mean. I think there needs to be some more work done around letting people know that actually movement to the Māori role and increases in the Māori role has a flow-on effect to the potential for more Māori electorate.
For years, there has been a campaign to loosen the restrictions around registering on the Māori role. The Commission itself has long asked Parliament to change the wait time. The law was changed late last year when the government reached a compromise with National, which resulted in the 3-month waiting period. The change was ostensibly to prevent people from gaming the system, although the Commission says it had no evidence of this occurring. Annie Te One says most of the political engagement with Māori is in the 3-month period where changes aren't allowed.
I think it's going to be a really interesting period to figure out what it does mean for Māori voting, and also the way political parties are going to start looking at the Māori electorates, and perhaps we might see a kind of rise in political party engagement in the electorates.
The Māori electoral option has been around since 1867, when Parliament established 4 Māori seats. What began as a policy to assimilate Māori into the mainstream political system has, after more than 150 years, become a distinctive feature of Aotearoa's electoral system.
Māori housing advocates say Cyclone Gabrielle highlighted stark disparities between Māori and non-Māori communities. The National Māori Housing Conference in Rotorua scrutinised the impact of disasters on housing inequity. Here's my report on the second day of the conference. National Māori Housing Advocate Te Mata Pihi's General Manager Wayne Knox delivered a clear message to the government.
Give us the resources and get out of the way.
He told the conference that the system failed Māori during Cyclone Gabrielle as whānau relied on iwi, hapū, marae and kāinga-led responses in the absence of civil defence and other authorities. And he emphasised how richer communities were the first to be helped rather than those living in rural areas.
We watched as the mainstream response seemed to miss our kāinga altogether, along with the resources. And as affluent areas had services restored promptly, while our kāinga were forgotten about, we were reminded just how racist the system can be.
Across the North Island, 500 properties have been red stickered, so can't be entered. The focus is now on finding homes for these whānau.
Focus on developing cabins for whānau to provide short-term accommodation, but also thinking about, whilst we're doing this work, how can we make those solutions more appropriate for a medium to long term?
The conference's host town, Rotorua, is no stranger to the housing crisis, with dozens of hotels and motels used as emergency accommodation since the COVID pandemic began. Lawyer and activist Annette Sykes, who created the Y2750 Waitangi Tribunal claim into housing for Māori, says some Te Arawa trying to come home were forced into these facilities.
When they were unable to afford the rent because everybody else's jobs were closed down, people in the hospitality industry, for example, but they weren't the only one, they came home. But they came home to a mean-spirited response from the people of Rotorua, and I'm sad to say, led by many Māori leaders in this room.
She says those wanting to help homeless people during the pandemic were also shunned by the community.
People like Tiny Dean were literally dealt with by our iwi as an outsider, trying not to help people, but wrongfully portrayed as someone who was there to make money off the misery of our people, and he was forcibly placing people into motels. That could not have been the furthest thing from the truth.
The government introduced a four-year $730 million commitment to speed up Māori-led housing delivery in 2021, aiming to build more than 1,000 new homes. Housing Minister Megan Woods says there needs to be a partnership between the Crown and Māori to help solve the housing crisis.
It is critical. In fact, it is the only way that we work together. Our Labor government will not resign from this, despite the concerning race-baiting rhetoric that we are increasingly hearing from the opposition benches when it comes to notions of partnership and working together.
She acknowledged there's no quick fix to a crisis that's years in the making. Ariari mai o koutou taringa ki Te Waonui. You're listening to Te Waonui, a wrap of the week from our Māori news team here on RNZ National. Ko Ashley McCall tēnei. A group of the country's preeminent Māori historians are warning a new curriculum is not a silver bullet for solving issues with confronting the country's past. At the launch of the latest edition of their journal, Te Pohere Kōrero, at the National Library this week, they laid a wero for teachers as a new history curriculum rolls out. This year is the first that all students from years 1 to 10 will have to learn about New Zealand histories in schools. Aroha Harris is one of the country's preeminent historians, the author of Tangata Whenua, A History, and a scholar at Auckland University. Jamie Tahana spoke with her at the launch.
10th edition tonight, so yeah. What was it, 1999 the first?
Yeah, 1999 was the first one, and then the second one a couple of years later, and then a bit of a break, and we sort of picked up again. I think it was maybe around 2007, 2008, yeah.
And from first edition to today, how have you seen the embrace of Māori historians, if it's an embrace or, you know, the way it's looked upon change as we, you know, have passed 20 years now?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's a really good question, actually, because we're still few in number in terms of, well, if you're talking about historians who've come through the academic discipline that we call history, then we're few in numbers. But if you're talking about historians, the way that Māori tend to talk about historians, there are a lot more of us because we're not bound by the discipline necessarily. So I guess that's something, and getting publications I think makes a big difference as well. And we have, you know, had some waves of publication now. You've got Monty Suter's work, Te Māori Tau's work, and the work of the, you know, the ones that are here tonight, Peter Mehana, Arini Loda. So yeah, I think it's that mix of people and publication, and after publication I guess distribution and getting people to read and make use of the work. And I guess the other thing of course is that with this new curriculum coming in, there's an increased demand, a sort of sharp spike in demand for needing to know Māori history and being able to take that into schools.
Yeah, that word they're needing to know, and you kind of pointed out quite clear the fact that we're relying on compulsion kind of aligns to how we value our history in a way. So with that change in issue 10 here, where is it at as we take this, you know, next big step here, and what are the opportunities but also the risks?
Yeah, I think both the opportunities and the risks are massive. The opportunity is to shape future generations, to shape our people for decades, if not longer, to come. And that's a massive opportunity. And given the state of things at the moment, the pushback against co-governance, the sort of misinformation wars about so many, many things, you know, history, one thing about history is that you have to be critical. You have to be critical of the sources that you use. You have to be critical of the information that comes your way. And if we're teaching that from a young age, then, you know, hopefully we'll get to a generation that's more engaged, not just with the debates of the day, but with the sources that fuel those debates. And I think, because I don't think that this is some kind of cure-all and, you know, if everybody learns history properly, then there'll never be another debate in society again. I don't think that's the case, but I do hope that we'll have a better quality of debate is what I hope for. No matter what you're arguing about, it might be about the housing crisis or it might be about climate change, you'll be able to think to yourself, now there's a history here, like there is a historical perspective to be had about this. And I think we too quickly think that things are not historical. We think the housing crisis is a current day problem, but actually it's a historical problem. Inequity is a historical problem, and we don't grapple with our past in that way. And I'm not, you know, but the past is full of so many things. It doesn't all have to be doom and gloom and we've been this bad before, because there are also some fabulous stories to be told from our past.
Sources, you just said there too, because curriculums tend to paper-based, whereas for Te Ao Māori, so much of our history is tied within our kōrero, kahu, or lakes, mountains and stuff. When we look at sources, from what you've seen, how are we accepting, you know, this mātauranga-based histories and things like that? Or is that one of those risk areas?
I think that's one of the risk areas. And I think the more generous Māori are with our stories, the riskier it gets for us in particular. Because you don't want people to misuse your stories or misuse your history. You don't want them to weaponize it against you. You know, you hear people say, what about the musket wars? Well, you know, that's actually in the curriculum, but why can't we have a critical discussion about the musket wars without turning it into a weapon against Māori to kind of say, you know, that's why you should accept colonization, because you were just as bad. Like, that's not the point of history. I think part of that is, you know, let all the diverse stories, that the diverse histories come through as well. But yes, a huge, huge risk. And if we think that teaching history well can, you know, lead us towards a different kind of society, a different kind of citizen, then maybe it is a risk worth taking.
With test curriculums and stuff, it is from the Ministry of Education, the Crown. It's that element of, you know, shaping it and stuff. And historically we have seen narratives shaped against Māori, be that the land wars or Waitangi even. So with, you know, you raised a good point about autonomy. Would what we're seeing of a history allow us to, you know, ask those difficult, critical questions about, you know, foundations or sovereignty and things like that? Or is there a risk it's going to be shaped to possibly dilute those things about Ngāpuhi never ceding sovereignty?
Yeah, and I think people are probably, for good reason, concerned about that kind of thing happening, that we want to, and, you know, Pete alluded to it as well, that kind of packaging history so it's a bit more palatable and people, not too confronting for people. You know, my concern about that is that I feel like that's an adult conversation, and I'm not sure children who are so open and expressive and creative, I'm not sure they would take the actual history that way. I think that's adults sort of being fearful of something and not wanting to put that on their children, but not realising that they're putting that fear on their children, whereas we should, you know, I feel with children, and look, I'm not a teacher, I'm not a, you know, certainly not a teacher of young children, but I feel that they have a creativity and an openness, and if we're just letting them explore things, explore different sources, get them to talk to their grandparents. It's wild how what they find out about their own grandparents and that they've never had those stories before and how fascinated they are by their own history and their own past.
Is there any final comments about this edition of Te Pohuri Kōrero or what you'd like whānau schools to take away from it?
I hope that teachers can see it as a very generous resource. That's probably the big thing for me. The hard work is yet to come and it's all on the teachers and in the school, so, you know, hopefully it's useful for them.
That's Professor Aroha Harris. Residents of Port Levy will gather over Easter weekend to celebrate 100 years of the whare at the heart of their community. The Weatherboard Hall to Te Hua Rewa was built in 1923 at Kokorarata on Te Pātaka on Raikaihautū, Banks Peninsula. Throughout its history, it's been a dance hall, a native school and space for hui, weddings and tangihanga. Paul Kiripaiwai spoke with local toa, that's Ngaitahu dialect for kuia, Mere Crofts, about her memories of Tū Te Hua Rewa.
Could you tell me a little bit about the history of this hall, this whare? What kind of role has it played in the community over the last 100 years?
Well, I've been connected to Port Levy I've just turned 80 in December, and I was brought up with grandparents at Port Levy and therefore had a lot of connection with the marae, Tū Te Hua Rewa. Mind you, I must say it, at that time we used to call it the hall. It wasn't the marae until later on when our people started going to te reo classes, but it was like a community hall. But we still had our own tikanga, even though we called it a hall. So I've participated in the Tū Te Hua Rewa for a long time. I was involved at a very young age of attending social activities that we had at the marae.
When you think about the marae, the whare, what are your defining memories of it, I guess?
There were big changes after our people started going to te reo classes, and we started putting things into some sort of order, like tikanga and different things like that, because before it was really used just as a community place. We held houses, sessions, yacht races, and all that type of thing. We had a very strong connection with the Pākehā community, which helped to raise money to extend the facilities. Because there was, at one time, there was only just a building with a little kitchen in the corner. But now, I don't know whether you've seen the progress we've had since the Ngāi Tahu claim. We've actually got toilets now, to where flush toilets, to where we used to have long drops. And we've got a beautiful dining room, and we've got a whare wānanga room as well now. So we've changed from what it used to be.
Can you tell me about a little bit about the celebrations that are going to happen at Easter? What kind of things do you guys have planned for that?
Oh, this is going to be really important to me because there'll be so many people that are trying to connect up back home to where there's a lot of them that haven't been back for a couple of generations. So, you know, this is how important it is with all these people returning home and to learn about the history of days gone by. We've got a lot of activities that are going to be happening during this weekend. The first day is a family day. The next day is going to be visitors and people that have been invited that have helped us through the times of bringing this all together. The third day is going to be games and activities, and we're going to be centering around the children.
If you could think of sort of one word that for you would, you know, sum up what this all means to me, means to you, what do you think that would be?
Well, I just feel as though, you know, I'm a guardian for the next generation. It's not just about me, it's about the next generation that's coming through.
Te Waonui I tēnei wiki. That's Te Waonui for this week. You can find all our Māori news stories on our website, rnz.co.nz, under the TL Māori section. Thanks for joining us. Ko Ashley McCall tēnei, noho ora mai, tēnā koutou katoa.